You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, it is the middle of August, and that means that Pacers topics are harder to come by, but Locked On Pacers never stops, no matter how few Pacers things happen in the week. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News. And on the other line, Indy Cornrows writer Adam Friedman, my co-host. Adam, how are you?
Doing pretty well. It's middle of August, so it's getting kind of boring, but we're, what, 6 weeks away from basketball starting again? So
6 weeks.
Seven, like the 18th.
Preseason, right? Basketball, Adam, matters.
No, it doesn't. It's just like football. It doesn't matter.
Let's remember to tell everyone this, because it's going to start in September. We're going to start doing those player previews like we did last year.
Yes.
So be ready for those. Not sure how we're going to do it yet, but we just decided we're going to. So just be ready for those.
We'll figure it out sometime in the next week or two.
We will figure it out. But today, inspired by our friend Lazarus Jackson over at the Detroit Bad Boys of SB Nation. We were on his podcast. That has not been released yet, but you'll hear it soon. But he asked us what we thought the Pacers' biggest weaknesses were, and I liked that question a lot, because I think you get caught up in, you know, in the offseason, you really get caught up in, like, the peak scenario a lot more than the doomsday scenario, so I enjoyed having to think backwards for once. And I want to talk about those today. It's going to be a sadder show because we're talking about weaknesses.
I do want to say, I was going to write about the weaknesses anyways. Like, I had a kind of have an outline of something planned. It's like Tuesday, so his question reminded me of it, but it wasn't the driving factor. I was going to do something about this, and I'm in the middle of fidgeting something about their weaknesses. Not all of them, but at least one of them.
Well, we should still give Laz a shout out, because that was a good time.
It was a good time, though. That's a great podcast, so people should listen to that one whenever it releases. I'm sure we'll retweet or something like that whenever it happens. But it was a good time. Best first, like, three-way podcast that I think went well.
It's really hard to do three-way shows. Anyway, this is a two-way show, and we're going to talk about the Pacers and their weaknesses. And we both kind of had the similar but different answer to the question. But I'm going to lead off with one here, and I'm going to go with wing depth. We talked about this last time, so I'm just ready for it. They have Bojan and McDermott, who are really wings for sure. But I personally call Victor Oladipo a guard. And he's better at point guard than he is at the three. Tyreke Evans is the same way. He's better at one and two than the three. They don't have any fours who can play the three well. So if one or Bojan or McDermott gets hurt, they're really sunk on the wing, because last year Lance was better at the three than I think either of Vic or I guess Tyreke would be the same. But, you know, they just have less wing, about the same wing depth as last year, with less ways to mitigate the risks if something bad happens. And I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, I think it's the same as last year, where they have – legitimately one proven wing player on the roster. I mean, McDermott, I don't think they gave him a big contract, but I don't know if he's like super proven. We're saying with Lance, it's not the same way. They have, and luckily Bojan didn't get hurt, but they literally have one proven wing player, and then it's kind of patchwork the rest of the way, whether it's going three guard lineups, which they can do with Evans or Oladipo at small forward, last year with Lance or Oladipo. So it's, yeah, the thing is, they have plenty of guards, but then when you look at their power forward situation, they really have a guy as their backup power forward is more traditionally a center and Sabonis, and then Young is not really kind of fit to play the small forward backup spot, even for a limited time. He's kind of too slow. So then you're really kind of stuck with Bojan and then McDermott, who, again, is not really proven.
Yeah, and I know last year that you remember they had that weird stint where they tried TJ Leaf at the three for, like, the tiniest bit, and it was terrible. I hope they don't go with that again. Glenn Robinson, obviously gone. He was more solid, but it was hurt all year, and that's what kind of made me realize that it was the same kind of situation as last year. Poitras played a little three last year, but then he got relegated to no playing time no matter what was happening for some reason after he got his deal. So they're really, really light at that position, and that does concern me, because I mean Thad can in theory play the three on defense, but on offense they'll just be in a lot of trouble if Bojan especially gets hurt. So that was what I would say is my forefront of my mind of weaknesses.
Yeah, I think Leaf is just not fast enough to play the wing, or not even good enough in defensive end. I think Porter's situation, he's not a good enough offensive player. What I think is so crazy, though, is that in a league where pretty much every team is looking to find that, basically to play small forwards, whether it's playing the small forward at the two or the four, this team has kind of taken a different approach and not really even made a huge effort to go and get the big, the kind of athletic, like they let Robinson leave. So they didn't really like in a league where you need tons of kind of small forward depth. They've kind of ignored it.
Yeah. Last year, their backup three for like a month was Damian Wilkins, who is not in the NBA anymore.
Wouldn't be able to play at a quality, even like an above average level or even average level.
Would have been useless in the playoffs, completely useless. I mean,
yeah. I mean, even the regular season wouldn't have been that good. I mean, it seemed like they're winning despite the small forward depth. And it seemed like if they found some kind of like solid small forward, eventually it would kind of solidify the whole team.
Yeah, and they still have that open roster spot. They're two ways. Wilcox will really be injury assurance for a two guard, and Sumner probably won't play very much anyway. I feel like they have to use that last roster spot they have on, you know, just like a replacement level three who could, in theory, just come in the court and not suck in case that injury happens before the roster cutdown deadline.
Yeah, but then they also were lucky. Maybe Bojan played 82 games again. Doesn't matter. I mean, Bojan played 82 games with 30 minutes a game basically last year.
Yeah, he has never had injury problems. I mean, that makes it, you know, that you could say he's due because he's 30, but at the same time, you could say, you know, he's clearly proven that he can stay in shape for a whole season and play the whole way through. I mean, his least games played in the season is 78. So that is awesome. And that makes it more encouraging, but it's still like even if McDermott goes down, you're still in trouble. So it's just something to think about.
Well, you're not really in trouble because you can move Evans kind of around to the three like they did with Lance last year when they lost Robinson. I mean, you're not completely screwed, but you are screwed at Bojan Gotcher because he's, like I said, he's the only player proven to play a small forward on this roster. I mean, like at a consistent level. And so, like, I think the one game he didn't play, I know there were other injuries, so that didn't kind of factor in any. It was against Washington, so it didn't really. There were other things that made the game go bad, but you could definitely see the issue when they were trying to throw out Atlanta with like Lance at the three in the starting lineup.
Yeah, well, don't forget he didn't play against the Hornets where they got destroyed in the last game.
Well, that game was like, I'm not counting because nobody played, right? In the top five or seven players set.
Glenn, that game
I just ignored. I'm just ignoring. That game doesn't count.
Well, for some reason, I thought you were about to say that. I was like, how is this going to be relevant? But you're right.
It was the Wizards game where I think Vic was hurt too, or Vic was, hurt too or sick maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
Lance started at the three and Corey Joseph started, I think. I don't remember. Joe Young started the second half.
Actually, I think Collison was hurt too. I think Collison will be and Bojan were all hurt. Months,
was it?
I am trying to remember. I know Vic was hurt as well. I'm just trying to remember if that was the same time as Collison's injury too. So it was a weird game for the team, and they actually stayed afloat somewhat.
Yeah, they get crushed in it. It was like early February, right? I remember this. Yes, I found it. February 5th. I would like to see this game.
Yeah, Collison was hurt right around then, I think.
So the starting lineup for the Pacers in that game was Corey Joseph, Lance, Bojan, Turner, and Thad. So Bojan did play that game.
What game did he miss then?
I've got to look at that now. You're asking a lot of me on the clicking here.
No, he missed a Chicago game earlier in the year.
Is that what it is?
They won by 29 in that game. So
I got the game log up. You got one more chance to guess.
What, the game that he missed?
Yeah. Hornets and blank.
And Bulls, right?
Hornets. And what the hell? Where is it? There it is. You're right. It is the Bulls. They won by 39.
I guess I'm blanking on. I guess that was like he had a good game. I don't know. That was a useless segment, I should say, after all that.
Riveting talk, talking about the one game he missed in which Damian Wilkins got to start. Remember, duh, it was his last game before they cut him. Oh, my God.
That's right. But I guess the point is, I guess, that Bojan didn't miss an important game the entire year.
No, he did not.
And that's why they kind of were able to stay afloat.
You know what's funny? The two games he missed, Poitras played 5 minutes in one, and Ben Moore played 7 minutes in the other. So that's what I mean. Like, look who has to play when this guy.
So crazy. When Bojan missed that game in Chicago, Leaf had 197 offensive rating that game.
Good God.
I know. I mean,
they had like 40 points in the first quarter of that game, right?
Yeah, they blew him out. But I mean, Leaf led the team in offensive rating that game with 197. That's ridiculous.
That's just dumb.
Victor had 144 offensive.
All right, ready for the other crazy one? Ben Moore playing in the game that he missed against the Wizards. Ben Moore's offensive rating was zero. Nice. He did not score his time on the court. Yikes.
All right, so let's move to another weakness.
Your turn.
I think it's the same. It's moving down to the power forward spot in general. I'm scared about it, especially because I don't know. I mean, I don't know why I think that's going to get hurt. I guess because he's 31, and I just think 31-year-olds get hurt in the NBA. But It worries me because if Thad gets hurt, they're starting Sabonis there, and I don't know if that can work. And then there's nobody behind him that can even play the four unless you move Turner there with Okwin at center. I mean, it's really kind of scary unless you go super small and play Bojan or McDermott.
Yes, the fact that Leaf is not an answer makes it scary. I mean, he's not supposed to be. It's a second year, but it's still not good. That position is going to be scary if Thad gets hurt, just because they'll have to be playing someone out of position a lot and playing some combos that who knows how well they're actually going to work together. I agree with the assessment of Turner moving down and Okwin playing. That would work, but they'd probably have to, if they did that, play some Sabonis Okwin, which would just be a complete disaster. I don't know if it'd be as much of a disaster as Leaf, but either way, that would not be good.
You would say guys that can play the four or five like consistently, and three of them are centers, which is in a league where centers are have less and less value every time. It's kind of scary they didn't get a solid backup four, but I guess the reasoning is you can play McDermott there at limited times or Leaf. I can see that logic, but it seems like they could have found. I guess the big glaring weakness on this team is that 3-4 spot, a guy who could play both, who could play stretch four, who could play three at a time, that could really be a defensive threat. They have the offensive guy McDermott, but they don't have anybody that's on the defensive that kind of is at all scary.
Yeah, I think the difference between the 4-depth and the 3-depth is that McDermott could play up in theory, and I don't know if they'd like him to or not, and that'd be nice. Then you wouldn't have to play Leaf or any funky lineups, but then you're hurt at your 3-depth again, which we just talked about, because McDermott's playing the 4, so really forward depth in general. Yeah, like you just said, the combo 3-4 guy would be perfect here to just help shore up all this stuff. You know, they need to find someone like that if they can with that last roster spot, but I don't know if anyone's out there available who could even do that.
Yeah, I think so. The domino effect here is if Thad gets hurt and they put McDermott at the four, then all of a sudden you've got Evans playing the three because you're shifting him to backup, and then you're playing Joseph at the two, and then or two and one, and then you're end up playing Oladipo like 36 minutes a game or maybe 40 minutes in his absence, which is kind of a bigger picture kind of move where all of a sudden Oladipo's kind of carrying more than he should, because Oladipo probably should be playing like 35 games of their season for him to actually like be solid.
Yes. So looking at a list of available free agents, Luke Babbitt could probably cover.
I don't think there's a free agent out there that's any good. I think it would be through a trade. I mean, that's
Corey
the best
Brewer.
Way. Maybe. I think it's a buyout market guy ultimately, or a trade.
Yeah.
To get, I mean, not a first round pick, but a second round pick to get it just like a rotation cleaner. Four or three.
Yeah, there are not very many good options.
Or you know what the move ultimate is going to be is to somehow get Lance back because he doesn't fit in L.A. I mean, that might be the actual move.
Oh, jeez.
Because you can play the three at least, and then you have a backup three, and you don't have to put McDermott at the – or you don't have to play Evan at the three then.
Yeah, that's fair. That would work. But I don't think he'll come back.
I mean, I don't think so either. But if he's kind of struggling, the Patriots just throw out a second-round pick for him. I'm not sure LA's going to say no for a guy who is gone in a year, and they need it badly.
That is fair. All right. Any want to move on to more weaknesses or no?
Yeah, I got another one if you don't have one.
Yes, I would love it if you want to get one.
So I think we talked about it on our Detroit podcast, and I actually was starting to write about it, but it's the fact that last year a decent amount of the Pacers players performed above what was their career average. I mean, you take Oladipo out of it because you can just project that as a kind of a growth, but you look at Collison, Bojan specifically. Collison shot 46% from three versus, I think in his career, he's more like a 38% three-point shooter. Bojan shot above 40% for the first time in his career. He's around 38. And so that's kind of two guys who were critical to their success, who played at a level that you've never seen before. And it's kind of later in their career, so it doesn't kind of make as much sense. Bojan, it does in the sense that it's his fifth year in the league. So that sort of projects out. But it's relying on that again and relying on basically Thad staying healthy and relying on Vic kind of putting up numbers again, which is sort of like all this things of and, which kind of makes it scary.
Yeah. Tyreek is almost 30 now too, if I recall, 29 maybe this year.
They're this weird team where they have like this super young center core of Sabonis and Turner. And then they're not really young anywhere else. I mean, they got Oladipo who's kind of in the middle of everybody. Then you got a bunch of 28 to 32 year olds, the rest of the roster.
Yes, exactly. And I agree with you that there could be some fall off somewhere. Who knows where it'll be. You just have to hope someone else steps up in that scenario. But if I had to pick a guy, that I think it'll be. I think it's going to be Thad.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about before with the injury depth. If you can hear the thunder behind me, sorry about that. It's just kind of storming here.
I thought that was at my house. I was like, it's sunny outside. What the heck?
Oh, it's thundering behind me pretty loud. But that's where Thad is, and that's where the whole domino effect of Thad getting hurt or Thad not being there falls kind of hurts this team. So, and he's probably the most likely one to kind of have a drop back because he is 31 years old.
Mm-hmm. I just took a bite of my food. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to talk longer. I got this. I agree. And he's kind of that do-it-all kind of guy, and that's the hardest contribution to keep up as you age because, you know, his fitness just naturally declines. Like, he's 31 now, and he could try to keep it up as much as he can, and then, you know, maybe it's the same, we're just overestimating this, but, like, he could be the guy that, you know, maybe he can't play 30 minutes a game and still be the do-it-all glue guy anymore. Maybe he can't be the awesome defender he used to be while keeping up his offensive production. You know, that kind of stuff could be a big drop, and that could really hurt the team, and it would fall right in your power forward depth thing, too.
Yeah, and if you look at his career stats, too, his years in Indiana, he has had a drop-off. It's really a drop-off in shots taken, which could be contributed to the fact that he's no longer kind of the first option where he was kind of in Brooklyn or Minnesota or in Philadelphia, where he was sort of had free reign to do whatever the hell he wanted. But he has had this kind of taking less shots. He, at times, you watched him last year, he sort of struggled. Like, he used to be able to take guys off the dribble and back them down, and last year he kind of struggled. He was shorting a lot of shots, and it's just kind of little things that, you know, for a guy who maybe only takes 10 shots a game, if you knock his percentage by, you know, 5 points, it knocks him down 2 points a game, which can really affect a team that won so many close games. And then if he's not having the offensive production and he's not able to really make up with on the defensive end, then you get a whole bunch of issues.
Yeah, then he's just almost unplayable because – not unplayable. But, like, he was so good last year because he produced on both ends and he held the young guys with the old guys in a way that no one else could do. Yeah, now all of a sudden you've got, like, some sporadic stuff. You don't have a glue guy, which is just so vastly important. And no one is there to replace that. Like, Collison doesn't have the both ends impact. Bojan had it for one game but doesn't have the both ends impact. Like, you're losing a lot with him, more than you do with Collison and Bojan. Like when we talked about trading veterans last year, it was always last offseason, it was always Collison or Bojan because, like, oh, they're in theory an expiring contract, and they're just, like, replacement-level starters, and it was never Thad. Now Thad comes into more of that equation where he, like, could be the guy who drops to that level.
Yeah, and I actually think Thad – there was a couple games where Thad shot 0 for something, and he was actually, I think, unplayable in those games almost to an extent. Ooh, I mean, yeah, but – it became the point where he was such a detriment on the offensive end where, like, teams were just daring the Patriots to let him get the ball and make a play, and he wasn't able to, that it really affected the offense. I don't think they won any of the games where he shot 0 or 1 of whatever, where his percentage was pretty low because he was such a critical part of the team, but also because, you know, it's much better for him to have the ball in his hands than Oladipo every time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's rarely – well, they don't really run plays for him too, which is something.
They do. They run that cut to the basket sometimes for him, the back end cut.
He's always like the safety valve behind the 3-point line. Then he shot fakes and takes to the rim or something.
Well, no, but, like, he'll get that play where he cuts the hoop and they move it around a bunch and he kind of ends up under the rim wide open a lot. And he gets that shot where he goes kind of goes over his head. And sometimes it goes in, sometimes he hits it right off the front of the rim.
He cuts from the baseline a lot. Him and Vic had chemistry last year. That's hard to
remember. You're right. They don't run, like, designs for him because he's not really the kind of player who can take anybody off the dribble anymore. But they do let him, like, kind of slash the rim and they run a bunch of fakes at the top and action at the top just get him kind of open.
I feel like his action's just like a secondary action in a lot of plays that just happens to work out a lot because he's good at what he does.
That could be, or it could be design. I actually don't know. I mean, you're right. It could be that they're just trying to score up top and he ends up just open down low, but it could be that the whole point of moving the ball up top is to kind of distract from the fact that he's just running around kind of ending up wide open.
Right.
I don't know. That it's hard. That's a hard thing to know in an offense unless you actually know the Pacers playbook, which is
yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
But can we talk about Collison for a minute and just the fact that he shot 46.8% from three and that he probably won't do that again? And
he's at 3 years over 40, but I don't think he'll be even close to league-leading levels next year.
So it's 3 years over 40, but, like, it was 40 and 41%, not 40, almost 47%. No, there's a difference between that.
You're right.
Huge difference. And it was at a higher volume than the last 2 years.
Well, like I will say this too, though. If you put the context in, like, in Sacramento, you're not getting nearly as good of looks as you are when you are surrounded by Victor Oladipo. Like, his shot quality is going to remain pretty similar to last year.
I guess you're right. But also, it's kind of I guess the word is the cat's out of the bag. Or now people know he's like a knockdown 3-point shooter, so they will be more attentive to him on the 3-point line in that way too. And he's not like he's the kind of guy who can be constantly moving and get kind of shoved like Kyle Korver, where like you might know he can make a three every time, but you can't stop because he's constantly moving. And Collison more of is like a stationary 3-point shooter, where it's like you forget for a second that he has the ball in his hands. You drop back to cover the depot, cut to the baseline, and then he ends up wide open, or like it's off a pass and like that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what to expect from him from three. Like in my head, it's going to be like 43% or 44%. Maybe that's a bad idea for me to think.
I guess it also depends if they purposely run plays to get him open in the corner.
Right.
It was a game against Miami earlier this year where at the end of the game, I think they needed a 3-point shot and they purposely ran a play where Oladipo got double teamed or there was a screen and ended up Collison wide open in the corner and it would drain for a three. But like, if they do more of that, yeah, his percentage might stay up there, but I think he's going to not take as good a look. It's going to be a lot of kind of those dribbled up kind of forced threes almost at the end of shot clocks at times. I think that's going to, when Oladipo's forced the ball out of his hands, they'll get it to him and he'll kind of be forced to take a shot. And I don't know if his shooting motion, which is not like super quick, is kind of designed to work in that kind of way.
You know what he could benefit from a lot of too is Tyreek, because when he played without Vic, it was a disaster. Not a disaster. It just wasn't as good.
No, it wasn't as good. He was okay with the bench unit guys, but when he was in starters, Vic was bad.
It was bad. So I think Tyreek will help him. But I think my key for Collison is keeping that turnover rate at the career low level he had it last year, because you know they just keeps the ball in the Pacers' hands, and when they have like not inconsistent scoring, but you know, unique scoring. They have the mid-range thing going on. You know, they need as many possessions as they can get. If their point guard can continue to never turn it over and make a bunch of threes, that's great. And depending on, you know, how much he regresses in both of those categories will depend on how effective he can be.
Yeah, he had a 4.5 S turnover rate, and he had 126 offensive rating on the season.
Nuts.
I mean, that is nuts. I mean, that's insane. And the thing about Collison too is because he's undersized, he's not going to be able to be the kind of guy that scores 20 points a game. He just doesn't have the body type to do it. But he was when he struggled in the playoffs, that was critical to why the Pacers struggled too. I mean, he could have kind of made up for some of Oladipo's shortcomings in games, he did in game three, but game four and five, and he really didn't. He also struggled. So that's something to look into when it gets to the playoffs is how he kind of plays. Because I think kind of a different player in the race than it was in the playoffs.
That was bizarre. That kind of came out of nowhere to me because it didn't feel like his looks were bad. They just weren't going in.
It felt like George Hill actually kind of shut him down, to be honest.
A little bit. Well, yeah, but I mean, from the threes, like he was getting the looks that he always got. He shot over three a game, and they just weren't going in. And he shot really well from inside the arc. It's just the three wasn't going.
That game four, where they should have won, he was really bad. I think he was 5-4. It says 5-14 for 1-5 from three. I mean, that's I know Oladipo played really bad that game, but Collison kind of could have made up for it, and he just wasn't able to.
Yeah, he did not.
That four and game four and five, both him and Oladipo struggling, that really just hurt the team significantly.
Oh yeah, I mean, and you knew that, like in your head, you're like, duh, if they struggle, they'll do bad. But like, when you see it happen, you're like, oh, it's so easy to fix, just make the shot, and they just couldn't do it.
Well, and you don't think it would happen simultaneously, especially right. When the whole defense was designed to stop Oladipo and not Collison.
Yeah, that's what made him so rough. Is that that's true? It's like, okay, you're wide open, and you still can't make it.
Yeah, and it's. For a guy, like I say, who almost shot 50% from three and shot three a game, that's not so good.
And his turnover rate in the playoffs was about the same as the regular season. So, like, it's clear how obvious or how important both of those being good are to him being such a successful player.
Yeah, his turnover rate was fine. It was just he couldn't score. Sometimes it just felt like
could not put the ball in the basket. And
he had three single-digit games.
Crazy.
Do you have another weakness for the team?
I want to say their post guys defending on the perimeter because three of the four suck at it, and I would really like one of them to be good at it besides Thad.
Because I think Turner's going to surprise you.
I hope so. You know, I'm saying this as a weakness given what I know, but this one could change, you know. They'll probably get killed by stretch fours again or fours who can dribble or, in the case of Tobias Harris, both, unless that changes. But we will see. That is a could-be weakness. How about that?
Yeah, I think Turner's going to surprise you. Is it the time of year to start kind of getting overhyped into Turner, or are we reached that time? I mean, it's August. All signs point to Turner having a really good year, just the way he's handling himself in the offseason.
Yes. I think he's going to be quicker and more agile, and that's going to help a lot. And I hope that it works out, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether it's because I fall pissed if I'm only seeing him work out and not other players. I mean, I've seen some other player workouts, but I mean, like, of young guys, like, or maybe he's purposely putting it out there. I don't know what it is, but it seems like everything is pointing towards him having a better season because he's going to be in better shape and in better, like, I guess, have better agility because of the yoga he's doing. It looks like almost. He does look a little bit more like straight up and down and not necessarily kind of like top heavy like he did last year.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that he can be the one that changes that and makes it not a weakness.
Because if he can guard perimeter and defend the rim, he is unstoppable.
It's hard to differentiate, but like, this will be a weakness. Like, depth is potentially going to be a weakness versus this could be a weakness depending on player development, you know?
We're just and the thing about guarding the perimeter is he has long enough arms and he's tall enough where he doesn't have to necessarily be as fast as the guy in front of him, but he has to be able just to make the right, you know, second step where he gets beat and get behind the guy and block him. Like, he has that ability, so I wonder if it's just with him is learning how to kind of adjust when a guy beats him to get back in the right moment and basically behind the back swat him.
Yeah, I agree. Another potential weakness is there's not going to be enough minutes for my guy, Corey Joseph. all jokes aside there, with his role diminished, perimeter defense could just be different. You know, he was very important to the cogging of the bench.
Why would his role be diminished?
Well, won't Tyreek take a few of his minutes away in theory?
I don't know. Not if he's playing in the Lance spot, right? His minutes are going to come, right? And if you push McDermott back, I think McDermott can end up not playing a ton of minutes every night just because.
That could be who it is. Maybe I guess Corey stays and then McDermott doesn't play as much as I'm thinking. That could be.
Just because, I mean, I guess my guess is McDermott fits into the role of where you throw together, cobble all the minutes of like all the extra guys. So like Poitras and Ben Moore and TJ Leaf and Glenn Robinson when he played. Like throwing all those minutes, that would be McDermott's minutes plus maybe a little of Bojan's because Bojan might play like 28 instead of 30 a game. But then I really think Joseph will be the same, except you might not see him play every end of the game if Collison is kind of a good offensive player as he's been as he was last year.
That's fair. Maybe not.
Or they might lean more on Tiger end of games than Joseph, but I think minutes wise he'll still be in the mid 20s.
You know, it's not going to be a weakness closing lineups when Nate has like a bajillion options at his fingertips.
Yeah, he can go a lot of different ways. He can go really big and play his two twin towers and Sabonis and Turner. He can go super small and play Tyreek and Collison and Oladipo. I mean, they do have a lot of dimensions now, which will be nice because they'll be able to attack different teams who have, you know, this league where the regular season, a lot of it's about being able to adjust versus the postseason where it's back and forth kind of game. The regular season is about adjusting to other teams and their kind of lineups.
Yes. And I have no more weaknesses that are so obvious that I can name them.
You don't want to talk about coaching?
Yeah, Nate's going to play guys until there's 2 minutes left and they're up by 40. So that's his.
Yeah, you're probably right. I thought last year they were decent on back-to-backs, actually.
I think they were okay at those. I agree.
So I don't.
We would always, when we did our score predictions, which we are definitely not doing those this year. I would just pencil them in for a loss on every back-to-back and they proved me wrong a lot.
Yeah, I think they won the West Coast back-to-back one time, both games.
Twice.
Yeah, twice. Well, wow.
To be fair, one of them was like Phoenix, Sacramento, but the other one was Portland and somebody.
But man, they could that Sacramento game in Sacramento, they could have lost that one.
They almost close. Yeah, they were up 10 with like 2 minutes to go, and they needed Vic to save them.
Yeah, I do wonder if he becomes too reliable again on the Vic, we're just gonna let Vic ISO win games, and if teams have adjusted to it, if he can figure out another way to win close games.
Yeah,
I thought Nate did a good job, but honestly, I mean, if you just like break it down, it was like he just decided give Vic the ball with 2 minutes left and see what he can do. Like it wasn't like he was like drawing up these crazy plays. It was like give Vic, set a pick, everybody go out in corners and we'll let Vic go to the rim. I mean,
it worked
100%. It was great to see it, but it wasn't like it was some like complicated play design to end up with Vic right in the corner wide open or, you know, I'm trying to think like it was basically just like classic basketball, just let Vic kind of be the best player on the court. And I wonder if teams start double teaming Vic, if he can set up draw plays for Turner to get good shots, or I mean Tyreek Evans, or I guess the other guy could close things out is Bojan. Maybe I wonder if he does something like that. But Bojan in the end of games is scary, like in not a good way.
Sometimes he's awesome. That one playoff game.
Well, that was the end of the game though. Bojan at the end of games is like the last 2 minutes. It's like everything clutches up and he's all tight and he can't shoot and he's afraid to have the ball. He doesn't want to shoot. Like, he didn't want to shoot free at the end of games last year. Like he didn't want to get fouled. That was ridiculous. The guy shot like 85% from the free throw line. He didn't want the ball to end games at two free throws.
Yeah, they were not very good with him on the floor at the end of game deal. He was out a lot, though. They tried to go Kojo, DC, Vic a lot. So
they also weren't very good at free throws at the end of games. I mean, they missed.
I wish I could see a stat for that. I've always wondered about that. Clutch free throws. Maybe I can't.
Like in my head, I'm thinking of a couple games. So I know there was a Wizards game where Joseph missed like three or four free throws. They still won it, but he missed three or four. And he had to go with a big defensive play to win the game. And then I know there was a Cleveland game where Oladipo had two free throws go up by three and only made one of them. LeBron or JR, one of them almost hit a three to win the game. And then I know that Boston they lost in December. They had some free throws that would have kind of put it farther away and they couldn't hit them.
A rare JR miss on an important shot against the Pacers.
Well, he did that in the playoffs. You remember game?
The Pacers had the seventh best free throw percentage in the clutch last year.
Really?
Yep, 81.1%.
But like when you so does
Denver,
that mean
Detroit,
in games?
Orlando, Milwaukee, Utah, Golden State, Indiana.
But what? So what is the clutch down in the NBA stats? Is what it's like less than five minutes.
Less than 5 minutes to go.
What if you isolate that down to within 2 points with less than 2 minutes to go?
I wonder if you can do that. Point difference. Yeah, you can have 2 points. You say less than 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's go for it. All right, free throw percentage. The Pacers are now. Beep, 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 beep. Let me scroll down here for a moment. I can't even. 16th.
See, and that's where I think that's where the clutch stat. I have lots of issues with the clutch stat, but that's one of them where they count. The last 5 minutes isn't always clutch. It's and 5 points is not always.
I think they use last 5 minutes because that's when like the closing lineup is all basically.
But I was really meaning like when it's a 2 point game with 25 seconds left, the Patriots hit their free throws. that's when the closing
lineup free throws. Nice. 77 isn't like horrible.
No, but it for
it
a team who has
so important that it seems so bad
for a team who has two guys who shoot above 40% from three, Vic who should be a knockdown free throw shooter, and I mean I don't know what the team free throw average was. I can look it up real fast, but I'm sure it was above 77%
among the league. The
not the Pacers.
No, the league. Oh wait, what? I'm confused.
Take the Pacers like five or six main guys. Their free throw percentage, I'm sure, was a lot higher than what they had.
That's close.
I mean, they had Collison at 88. They had Turner at 78. I mean, I guess Thad was not a great free-throw shooter, but yeah, really, I'm sure the Pacers, as a team, overall, were better free-throw shooters during the game.
77.9% as a team last year.
Yeah, but if you take just, like, the top five, I guess.
Their top five guys in minutes. Oh, you can't even do that? That's stupid.
Yeah, you can't isolate those stats out, but it's
darn it, B-ball ref. You had me sucked in there for a moment. But the Pacers did win the six most games within 2 minutes.
Yeah, their defense was really good at the end of games.
Yeah, they did a great job.
They had a really good job stopping back when it mattered.
The fact that they had 27 games with that scenario is just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of times they were able – I mean, I'm thinking that Cavs game where they should have lost it like three different times at home and they managed to pull it out, or Washington a couple of times where they were in 2 points and they managed to – yeah, a guy missed an open three or whatever. I mean, it was just luck. Luck,
right,
and good defense.
I got to be more specific to be fun. 1 point difference with 1 minute to go. They led the league in win percentage. Woo-woo, 13-4.
Yeah, and they were, that said, I actually knew because I looked it up before. That,
and they were 17th in free throws in that scenario.
Yeah, so they were winning close games because of their defense, honestly. And
the Raptors and Knicks and Rockets did not miss a free throw given that scenario.
Yeah, so maybe the Pacers should be there, kind of. Especially when you have – when you play four guys who should be good from the free throw line and Turner's.
Meanwhile, the Magic only made a third of their free throws in that scenario. Tanking at its finest in Orlando right there.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm out of weaknesses. And I have a fantasy draft in 10 minutes. So I don't know how much more we can do today.
I think I got enough. I'm out.
Okay. Next week, I think we're going to talk about the division, right?
Yeah, let's do a division preview next week.
The Central Division.
First time since 2014, the Pacers might have a shot at winning the division.
That would be cool. Adam, what are you writing this week?
I'm doing some of the weakness stuff.
Hey, I was thinking about doing that after Laz's question, but I'll let you take the lead.
I mean, we have different sites, so you can do whatever you want.
True. I got the contract series starting in September. Whoop whoop. But
yeah, I'll start writing some player series stuff, I assume, come September.
Yes. Get ready for our player stuff too. And one more fan show. Maybe two. We don't know.
One more. Last one this week.
Yes. Probably one more. But thank you guys for listening. Have a great week, and we'll see you at the fan show later in the week.